Friends, from time immemorial and among all the people of the earth, the four sacred seasons have been celebrated and have been considered as being important points in the yearly cycle, and have always been surrounded everywhere throughout the globe with ancient traditions concerning their spiritual meaning. And of these four sacred seasons of the year, the winter, the spring, summer, and fall, of these four, the winter solstice was in some respects the most profoundly significant. It has been connected from very ancient days with the idea of the birth and evolution of divine beings, the production by means of initiation, the production of great trials and tribulations through which the neophyte went on his way to initiatory spiritual knowledge. At the winter solstice, the individual who was searching for that spiritual knowledge was supposed to be born, by analogy that is, as the birth of the child. And in the spring equinox, he reached a certain amount of adolescence, and in the summer solstice, he was supposed to enter into the state of his grown-up manhood, and in the fall equinox, the cycle, the era, the festival of the great passing, he was to leave, or he was supposed to leave this sphere and gain, or rather regain, a higher sphere for greater knowledge and still greater growth. All our symbolism, all our present day type of Christmas celebrations, everything that is connected with the Christmas season has started many, many years ago in the crypts of initiation as symbols of spiritual growth. Through the many thousands of years we have inherited these symbols. Back of them is a noble and very profound esoteric knowledge, which our symbols convey even today to those who know at least a little bit how to interpret them. The winter solstice has been regarded by the ancient races, that is, those who knew the meaning of the seasons, was regarded as the time when the neophyte, undergoing his trials and tribulations and tests, would finally make a living contact, a vital and living contact with the inner divinity within himself, and at the end of the initiatory cycle, become, from a mere neophyte, an initiate, a master of life. So the birth of the gods, the birth of divine beings, were all connected with the winter solstice cycle. You can trace this through various nations and races. It is a very interesting study. You take, for instance, the Anglo-Saxons. They had what they called the Mudra Neet, the night of the mothers, implying a divine birth. Among the Teutons, it was known as the Huguenot, the holy night. We find the same idea in the Greek mystery schools, in ancient Rome, Roman Saturnalia, among the Druids, almost anywhere. Now, there are all kinds of strange ideas current today under the name of initiation. Many people think that this is something that can be obtained by favoritism or by paying money for it. Brushing all that aside for the time being, as we're not concerned with these peculiar ideas prevalent in the Occidental civilization, let us define initiation from the standpoint of occult knowledge as being something like this. I would say that the initiation of a neophyte after many lives of individual occult training under competent teachers is initiation would be the developing in him of the faculty whereby he would know how to withdraw his consciousness from the mere human vehicle inhabited by all of us and to enter in full consciousness into the inner world and thereby learn experimentally and at first hand the workings of natural law, the manner in which nature operates, to experiment with the forces at work in the inner nature, and to experience during that process the various states of consciousness which other forms of life, human, subhuman, and superhuman, are distinguished by. In other words, initiation is the ability to enter in consciousness, which means the entire man, minus his physical body, into conditions where that neophyte can learn experimentally the way nature operates. And his ability, of course, to re-enter back into his physical and astral makeup and issue forth in his ordinary human consciousness at the end of that trial, at the end of that great experience, a full-fledged initiate, not a neophyte any longer. In order to be able to do this, the conditions are extremely severe and trying and difficult. It is not a question of a few years' training. It is a question of many lives of occult training and of selfless service and work in the occult cause. Nor can it be done individually without the help of a competent teacher. In other words, when it comes to the idea, the superficial idea, that initiation is something that anybody can gain, you see the futility of that thought. Now it would appear, if my understanding is correct, that the first season, the first sacred season, during which the neophyte reached the condition of adeptship, is the winter solstice. When we speak of the spring equinox as the next sacred season in turn. We do not mean, of course, the equinox that follows the winter solstice by 3 months. There may be several lives in between. What we mean is that the next stage of initiatory trials, tribulations, and achievements is to take place sometime at the winter, at the spring equinox. The same applies to the summer solstice and the fall equinox, not 3 months removed from each other, possibly several lives removed from each other, but taking place as new awakenings, further awakenings and spiritual achievements at those specific sacred seasons when they initiate, not a neophyte any longer, when the initiate is ready to undertake the next step in spiritual achievement and growth. You see for yourself that back of it lies the astronomical idea of the cross, the two equinoxes and the two solstices representing the cosmic cross against the background of the orbital motion of the Earth around the Sun. This orbital motion of the Earth around the Sun typifies the actual life of any one of us, symbolically and more than symbolically, actually, physically and in consciousness. We pertain to the same pattern, because every one of us is born, every one of us reaches adolescence, then adulthood, and we pass eventually into the beyond at the end of this incarnation. We also go through these stages in the small. Therefore, we are, as it were, projected in our own lifetime against a background which is both astronomical and psychological and cosmic, if you like to put it that way. Now, today we hear all sorts of things about the planets of the solar system. All kinds of interesting things brought about by scientific discoveries, the motion of some of our probes and satellites and whatnot. They're very interesting because much of what is being discovered supports the occult teachings. Many of the facts today faced by science can be found not only hinted at, but actually stated, openly stated, in the pages of the Secret Doctrine of Blavatsky. And we are beginning to understand that somehow or other the solar system with these planets and the circulations of various substances, elements, magnetic currents and whatnot form a united whole. Today it would be utterly impossible to find a scientist who would tell you that space is empty, as used to be the dogma. Space is very much full, even to the present day scientist. It is full of all sorts of things, and more of them are being discovered all the time. Well, one of these days, somehow or other, I don't know when and how, but they will come to the conclusion that in some peculiar way the solar system as a system is a unit, that the planets form sort of organic units within the greater unit, and that there are forces whether they call them life forces or not, which are circulating through that system and pulsating through it. Even today, astronomy has come to the conclusion that there is a pulsation, a rhythmic pulsation of forces in planets, in space, and in the corresponding organs of the human body. That's a long road from the long distance from the materialism of last century. Now, the interesting thing is that in the ancient teachings, of which we know but the general outline, the initiatory trials, tests, and the conditions under which the neophyte found himself during those tests, striving for initiation, that all of that is somehow rather connected with the motion of certain planets and their position in regard to the Earth and in regard to the Sun. Not very much has been given out on that subject. But we have learned, and any one of you can learn more about it by study and by putting two and two together. We've learned that the greater, the more important initiations at the winter solstice take place when the moon is new. When at the winter solstice, that is approximately 21st, 22nd of December, which is a slightly variable date, slightly so, if at that time the moon is new, that is between, its position is between the sun and the earth, greater initiations take place than when the moon is at a different angle. This year, for instance, new moon is approximately 2 days after the winter solstice. Well, that's pretty far out, relatively speaking. That angle is rather large, and therefore we cannot speak of it as being new moon. But it is much closer than it was last year, for instance. Obviously, if at the winter solstice the moon is new, it would be full moon 2 weeks later. So around the 4th of January, more or less, the new moon of the winter solstice will have become full moon. And tradition exists that if that is the case, and the neophyte on his way into the inner worlds leaves the crypts of initiation under the guidance of his teacher at new moon at the winter solstice, he will come back in 2 weeks' time back to Earth at full moon. And the moon that we see, is a stepping stone. It's a doorway both out and in. It is an outgoing doorway and an incoming threshold as far as this earth is concerned. We have had individuals these days staying on the moon a relatively short time. And the attempt has been successful. We don't know yet how it will come about later on, whether they may have developed some negative qualities from having been there. We don't know. We will hope that that is not the case. But I don't think that any student of occultism would fail to see from the teachings concerning the moon that a lengthy stay on it for the human being is up to hurt that human being very badly through the negative magnetism that exists in that dying body. It is not dead. It is very much alive, but it is a dying body. Now that's a subject all by itself. Now it would appear that far greater initiations in their scope and in their importance for the human race take place at those rare times when the new moon at the winter solstice is also connected with two other positions, and that is the near presence of Venus and Mercury, near presence of these two planets in the same visual line between the Earth and the Sun. Not exact, but closely by. These positions are extremely rare. I don't think that we could easily find out how infrequently they occur. Some students have thought that perhaps present-day computers or present-day planetariums might be able to figure out how often can Venus and Mercury in their conjunction with the Sun fall at the winter solstice and at new moon. But the result is that our tables, our astronomical tables, the very best of them, are not sufficiently exact, sufficiently delicate, sufficiently detailed and correct to give us the answer. Figures divide and depart from each other, cumulative errors within a very short time make the calculation useless. In other words, we will have to have some rather hidden and secret keys of an occult nature to find how often these things occur. Astronomy is not sufficient to answer the question, but it is perfectly clear from study that those conjunctions are a matter of a great many thousands of years, possibly tens of thousands of years, before they recur again. However, new moons at winter solstice would occur fairly often, relatively speaking. And that is why it has been said that these greater conjunctions at the winter solstice of three different bodies have to do with the appearance of racial Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Individuals of a sixth and seventh root race coming to strike the keynote of a new age and appearing among men once in several hundred thousand of years. The same would apply to the other three sacred seasons. They are connected with conjunctions and mutual interrelations of planets. Now all that is much more complex than appears on the surface, because it also involves emotions of other bodies than planets, and might very easily have something to do with the emotions of certain cometary bodies, of which we know very little as yet. Today we hear all this talk about this particular comet. And I suppose it has happened, as has happened before, some students, particularly in the astrological field, are going to write this thing to death because it suits their way of thinking, and they will read into it wishfully all sorts of things that probably do not actually exist. As a matter of fact, there are hundreds of comets in the solar system. Some of them are periodic and some of them are not. And I would like to ask one of these days some astronomer, some scientist who would be busy tracking this particular comet, I would like to ask him, why is it that comets, being supposedly attracted by the sun from out of deep space, miss the sun by just a few degrees instead of falling into it by attraction? I know ahead of time that that individual, although perhaps quite a fine man, might find that it is a little bit late in the day to continue the conversation, because there is no answer in his mind to my question. If a body is attracted by a greater body, it usually falls into it. And yet the most natural and best known quality of all the comets so far observed is that they miss the sun just a little bit, turn around it, and depart where they came from. From the occult standpoint, of course, the answer is somewhat simpler, and that is that what astronomy would call attraction and repulsion is of very small importance as compared with the occult qualities of the comet itself. The comet being the beginnings of either a solar system or a planet. The beginnings of them as a cosmic life atom seeking its ancient or former home, where it will eventually settle as a nebula and begin to unfold a system, whether solar or only planetary. There is an entity, a spiritual divine entity on inner planes working through the cometary center in its earliest stages of the production of a system. That again is another and a long story. But I feel that in some respects comets as well as planets are connected with initiatory cycles. Very little exists on that subject in the secret doctrine. Very little indeed. From time immemorial, we have had with us, as a human race, as a human family, great spiritual beings coming here at due times, cyclic times, in order to help the human race in its evolutionary growth. Some of them we know through the pages of history. Some of them we know through tradition and folklore. I'm sure that there are many of them about whom we know absolutely nothing, because some of them make themselves publicly known and others remain in secret because that is the type of work that they are engaged in. And peculiarly enough, their appearance among us as avatars, we might say, is also connected with initiatory cycles, because they too, as divine beings, come into these nether worlds for their own peculiar tests, for their own growth, as well as for purposes of a tremendous service to us, or into the spiritual realms, which are their permanent abode. It is these people, messengers, we might say, from greater humanities, higher, nobler races of people in the solar system, it is from them that has been derived from time to time all the sacred symbolism of our religious philosophical systems throughout the ages, as far as they have been recorded. And one of them is that mystic story about an avatara which the Christian world has come to know as Jesus, whose real name we do not know. We have around that figure all sorts of symbolic facts which the Christian world interprets literally. Someday, or even today, among more mystic people in the churches, a deeper understanding is beginning to dawn upon them. It is obvious, of course, when you look at it from the occult standpoint, that a divine being, or even a neophyte looking for initiation, aspiring to become an initiate, will eventually be immaculately born. Obviously so, because his birth will come about from the immaculate spiritual womb of his own higher nature. It is also obvious that he will be born in a cave. That cave is the material world, a symbol of the material setup, the material surrounding in which his trials and tribulations take place. Out of the darkness of that cave, he is going eventually to enter into a great light. It is also obvious, if you stop to think, that he will be surrounded by all kinds of animals in the cave, a symbol of our lower nature, our passions, our animal instincts, all kinds of animal and semi-human forces at work and at struggle within ourselves, until the inner man brings these animal passions into perfect control and into a mutual harmonious relation, when they become, instead of dangers, they become helpers in his own spiritual growth. When there is any kind of a Star of Bethlehem, so called, a star of anything else, is simply a symbol that initiates, teaches, do not appear in the human race by happen, by hazard, but come at stated times when certain planetary configurations take place. And those planetary configurations do not necessarily have to be visible with the ordinary human sight, but they would be known on inner planes as well as outer, by those who are endowed with spiritual vision among the teachers and know what all this is about. And then we have all sorts of other symbols, such as the Christmas tree. Now, with us, the Western civilization of the Northern Hemisphere, is a pine tree, or a fir, or a spruce. Well, geographically, that is what we have most of. But other races have had oaks. In other parts of the world, similar symbolism has been attached to palm trees. The point is that it is a tree, a symbol of living force, a symbol of regenerated and ever renewed life coming out of the earth, born out of it by sunlight, air, sap, striving upward. And yet, in some of the ancient religious philosophical systems, there are mythological trees, much more logically so, had their roots upward and their branches spreading down below, the symbol standing for the universal life, rooted in the spiritual divine realms, gathering its sap from the spiritual divine planes and spreading it in the nether worlds of evolution with its branches in all directions, filled with the sap of the spiritual life, and carrying on those branches periodic manifestations of worlds. These are our lights of the tree. Solar systems, galaxies, planetary chains as end products of the evolution of spiritual life manifesting in the lower planes of manifestation. There are many of these ideas which we really should, as theosophists, pause over and contemplate and meditate on, because they are key thoughts for spiritual understanding. And it provides to us a sense of universality of life and of the understanding that exists among all the races of men of the existence of spiritual life in the world. And so you see, friends, that these subjects connected with the winter solstice and the other sacred seasons of the year are really very profound, and much more profound than people realize. We are a part of a system, planetary and solar, a system in which everything is interconnected, in which the evolution of the last little atom and of every human being and of every divine entity way above us, way above our stage of evolution, and every one of these things, great and small, visible and invisible, are part of a pattern, of an overall pattern, in which the growth from one stage to another is not the result of chance, but the result of operation of cosmic law, As such, we can feel assured that we are well taken care of. Even those individuals, and that means millions, who would not understand a word of what we're talking about today here, they too are taken care of in the greater sense, in the more overall and general sense. But that obviously applies to everything, whether great or small, because it is a part of a cosmic structure, a portion of the circulations of the universe, in which nothing is left out, in which nothing hangs by itself, unrelated to anything else, obviously so, and in which, if we speak of the idea of family, everything from Adam to the stars is part of it. I think it is well worth our while to give this careful thought in the silence of our own meditations. We should bear in mind that deep inside of every human being there is a center of silence. That center of silence is the core of you and me. It is the center in which resides the greatest and the noblest part of you and me. It is that which the human being is essentially. Potentially, every one of us is a cosmic entity. At the center of us, in that center of silence, there is the fountainhead of all our strength, of all our abilities, of all the noblest faculties which a human being manifests. It is also the refuge in which we can retire when everything else seems confusion. It is that place where we can find new strength, where we can find wisdom, understanding, and that sustaining power which we all need in our evolutionary growth and in our desire to serve the noblest objectives of the human race. It is particularly around the winter solstice time that these ideas seem to have a special meaning, a special depth, an added and greater significance in our lives. It is a wonderful thing to realize that the winter solstice, the Christmas season, does exist no matter what. It has nothing to do with the changing political and economic ideas of various civilizations. It is a spiritual fact which remains from age to age, no matter what name you call it by. No matter what you do about it or not do, it is a cosmic event or a series of events which exists from cycle to cycle, and we hope is being understood more and more as the spiritual growth of humanity proceeds apace. And within us, we can find, if we search, we can find the strength and the power with which we can attune ourselves to the events of the initiatory cycle of the winter solstice. Everything has its vibratory note. The greater events which may be taking place even today, somewhere where initiations are taking place, those events can be tuned in to. They have a vibratory rate of their own, and you and I can tune in the silence by keeping our thoughts on these ideas. We may be touched in the silence by the outgoing vibratory rate from these places and from these men, and thereby derive a new strength in our nature for growth and for service, because we will have absorbed inwardly a nobler, a higher keynote of spiritual life. Therefore, at the winter solstice time, any one of us attuned at all can actually make an important step forward in our inner growth. It depends upon you and me and upon no one else. For in every human being there is that center of silence wherein starts the pathway of all spiritual growth. The pathway which leads up the slopes of spiritual achievement to the mystic east, the path which rises in due time to the very stratosphere of our being, upon which we can walk, must eventually walk, homeward to the very sun itself.